Hi, I'm Lee Costantino. I'm the fiction editor of the Stanford Storytelling Project. Welcome to our series of interviews with authors and artists. This week, Liz Bradfield is speaking with Peter Klein.
The Almond Orchard. The design is wise, I know. The crowns grow just so wide to ease the tree shaker's passage. Narrow pipes miser the water. Even light cooperates. Even the wind winds elsewhere. From Highway 5, the green corridors swing shut, swing shut, swing shut. They disappear at any other angle. Like a forest, they tangle the eye's incursions. Their one green is an obsession. It's now midsummer. Soon the bitterness will mellow. The first shell will split open to the hush of the never rainfall. You'll find it by these markers, the fallen billhook and the sheen of poison.
Can you talk about why, in looking at the West, you turn to plants and why these plants in particular?
Well, the first poem, The Almond Orchard, comes out of when I lived in Los Angeles several years ago and would drive as often as I could up to San Francisco. And so, of course, you take Highway 5 and you see this kind of majestic vision of the power of American agriculture, I guess, or else some days you might think of it as an apocalyptic vision of the power of American agriculture. And there are these beautiful almond trees for long stretches, and in certain seasons they'll be flowering, and it's just gorgeous. And yet it's all so planned and so rigid. And so I did a little research about it and was reading about an accident in which some migrant workers had been made seriously ill by being crop dusted accidentally. And so that's those two things, that newspaper article I read and then my experience of driving by is what the poem came out of. Why plants in particular? I grew up in Pennsylvania, and so the plants of California are very unusual to me. The orchards of where I grew up are all apple orchards and things like that. So it's the first time I'd ever seen almond orchards. And the manzanita tree, I just think, is exquisite in its beauty, almost as if it were designed for ornamental purposes for humans. But, you know, obviously that's not the case. So that's what I was struck by with that.
In your gut reaction, real quick, here's what I think of idea of West. What's West?
That's a very difficult question. I mean, I always saw California as a place of freedom, as a place to live the life that you maybe couldn't have lived somewhere else. And so how that relates to the landscape, though, I'm not exactly sure.
And I'm really interested, especially in the pairing of the poems of the cultivated almonds and then the wild manzanita, which is such a particular and beautiful, as you say, shrub, bush, tree. Can you talk a little bit about ideas of wildness or cultivation in the West, just generally or impressionistically?
Well, with the manzanita, it struck me for reasons like I said, because it does seem so designed. It seems like exactly what a person would want from a tree that they'd put in their yard. It has gorgeous contrast between the trunk and the leaves, and it's just so striking and sinuous, and it's the way it grows. And yet, it grows wild here. It's found, you know, it's most natural in places of poor soil, and you don't have to do much to make it grow. I don't know. I guess California I see as the place where almost everything grows. It's almost Edenic in that way. You know, if you bring a little water in, you can make practically anything grow here, it seems. And so, and that's a wonderful thing. But again, there's always the downside with you know, issues of migrant workers, of pesticides, of water use, of all these things, which, you know, you have to consider when you consider how wonderful it is that so many things can be grown here.
I'm really interested by the end of Manzanita in particular that we know its uses, which echoes for me. And because I think for me, when I hear that, what the poem is telling me is that we really don't. Like, in uses in what way? Uses in practical ways. You'd go over that. Can you read that last stanza and then?
Sure. Minor, ornamental, unfit for timbering, ideal for aquaria, parrot perches, patio sculpture, barbecues. We know its uses.
Can you just talk a little bit about that?
When I was just looking into kind of what it's used for, what people tend to do with it, I came across a whole list of things, including ideal for throwing it in your aquarium, or, you know, burns great in the barbecue. And it just seemed, for such a beautiful tree, that it could end up as a parrot perch. And, you know, and those are all legitimate human uses. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. We need places to put our parrots. But it seemed almost outrageous that something so beautiful could be reduced that way, I guess.
And I think the poem, in the end, for me, it escapes all of that by saying we know its uses. Because I think for me, when I hear that, I think, well, we don't really know what use the world has for the tree. And I love that expansion out at the end of the poem. I think that's great.
Exactly. That's what I was going for. We know our uses, but we have no idea about what its real use is.
Yeah. I'm also a little bit curious to hear you talk about the speaker in these poems, because there's an I briefly in both of them, but it's almost more like the poems are spoken from just this stance of personless observation. You know, they have an opinion and they have an aesthetic, but it's not about necessarily an individual's experience of what they're looking at, but it's about the thing in the world. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The eye in these poems, I think, is more like a conscience than it is anything else. Like you say, it doesn't have an existence in the world. There's no, I was walking down the street one day and I saw this. It's much more removed from experience than that. But it's meant to designate a consciousness and also a conscience that informs these observations, I guess, as a way to bring people in relation to these natural ideas, to bring a particular person in relation to them.
I'm curious, have you ever written poems about apple orchards? You mentioned them earlier as a Pennsylvania thing.
Strangely, I don't believe I have, except my mother grew up in where her grandfather owned an orchard of all kinds of fruit trees, and so I think they've come into the poems that way, but I've never visited those orchards. I've never even seen them. As far as I know, I think they were gone by the time I was born, and so they exist almost in an idealized state for me, not in any one that I've experienced.
It seems to me almost is that moving to a new place, and especially California, which, as you said, is so dominated by agriculture and growth and potential and devastation, that the that kind of botanical wildness of this place is just something that sings out more than it might in another place for you. I'm wondering, I'm guessing, I'm asking.
Yeah. It seems like all the wild places in Pennsylvania, at least right around where I grew up, certainly not all of them, but, and that even includes cornfields, which of course aren't wild at all, but still just growing things. All of those have been replaced by strip malls around where I grew up. And every year there's more. And so maybe in some ways California is a place where there's less of that, at least for now. And it's such a big state also, I think, that you can leave Los Angeles and still, you know, it takes a long time to get out of it. But once you get out, you can find that there are all kinds of different landscapes, all kinds of amazing things that haven't yet been paved over.
Are there poets that you look to as writers of place?
Bishop comes to mind immediately. You think of a poem like At the Fish Houses, you know, wonderful poem where landscape exists fully as a realized space, and yet it's also a place of philosophical inquiry or intellectual inquiry. And I think that's a lot of what I see as landscape doing, at least in my poems. I don't know whether certain ideas naturally gravitate towards certain landscapes or whether these things are just kind of artificially or arbitrarily imposed by the poet, but I think we all respond to them, or at least a lot of us can respond to the idea that certain ideas, certain philosophies are somehow embedded into the landscape itself, that they arise naturally from certain landscapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.